Is it too late to say Happy New Year?
Way too late.
Is it?
Isn't it February?
Haven't we already had a month? Yeah, it's a good point.
We've moved on.
Happy New Year anyway. There's launches, there's drivers, there's teams, personnel changing. There's all kinds of things to talk about. That is why we're here today doing a show.
Okay, it is our first show of 2013.
We weren't expecting to be here this soon.
You scheduled an impromptu Cypodcast show because you were so excited by all of the launches going on. You felt the Formula One vibe again, didn't you? You thought Formula One is back and so should we be.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so what have you got? What's on your list of things to discuss then?
Well, let's start at the very beginning. I think the big news to hit first in 2013 was Toto Wolff when he abandoned his post at Williams and defected to Mercedes.
Not a rumour of this happening before all hell had broken loose. I didn't see any rumour or speculation. Nobody hinted that changes may be underway.
The day before it happened, but that seems to be the way things are done now. The day before it becomes fact, everyone says this is happening, then the next day it happens. But nothing before that. It was quite a surprise.
I thought Wolff was well ensconced at Williams. I thought he would be there for the long term. I took it to be a succession plan. Frank Williams
what and, it was supposed
moving
to be.
On to Toto Wolff in the future. That's not going to happen now.
No. Frank said, Toto has a long history with them, as in Mercedes, and I certainly was not going to stand in the way of him accepting this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Which just seems weird to me, because Mercedes, surely, are a team that are going to come and go in F1.
Williams being a manufacturer,
are probably going to be there for the long haul. I would have thought being at Williams was more of a lifetime opportunity.
Williams have a much more significant history in Formula 1. Mercedes, obviously, they were in motorsport. They've been in motorsport for a long time. They were in Formula 1 way back when, but then they left for a very long period. So you have that huge gap in their history. I suspect you're right. As a manufacturer, they're going to come and then they're going to go. One would assume that when they go, they leave the team to Wolff. So his once-in-a-lifetime opportunity is to own his own Formula 1 team, perhaps?
Do you think?
Is that what he's thinking?
But then he would have been essentially the owner at Williams. I don't see how that's any different.
We are assuming that.
Wow.
That may not be the case. Maybe he sees more opportunity at Mercedes.
He does already have a lot of involvement with Mercedes, and he's got stakes in the DTM series and all kinds of things. So, but weirdly, he's moved over to Mercedes, but remains a shareholder in Williams as well. So he has his finger in both pies, and I'm just not sure that's right.
Long-term merger?
What?
Very long-term plan.
Williams-Mercedes.
Yeah, I can't see that working. I genuinely, the logic of this defies me at the moment. I've looked at it from all angles. I thought about it from every perspective. I genuinely can't see the obvious logic in what he's done. There must be a greater master plan at hand here, but at the moment, not a clue what it is.
No. I mean, I'm sure people all over the paddock have involvement with all sorts of other people and there's shares dipping about all over the place, but it just seems really, I don't know, it makes me uncomfortable that he's like a 50% shareholder in two teams. Well, is that right?
When you have a publicly floated company like Williams, that's absolutely fine. There's nothing you can do about that because it's a public company. Mm. It would be unusual if they were both private teams, I suppose. And we don't know whether or not there's more to his shareholding than maybe meets the eye. I don't know. You're right. When there's a conflict of interest of the two teams, say one, you know, want to vote one way in whatever future decisions have to be made of the sport, and one may want to vote another way. What happens then? Does he have any power or influence to sway Williams? I presume he doesn't, but maybe he does.
There was also a bit of a conflict because obviously his wife Susie is development driver at Williams, and we all thought maybe she'll not be there any longer, but they've extended her contract and increased it because she's going to get to drive the car first, I think, when it eventually arrives. So that is, you know, I think that proves that she wasn't just brought in because of him, but equally, that also seems quite odd. She's going to be developing their car and her husband works for another team. It's all just very, very strange.
What are they going to talk about at night? That's the question.
I mean, I'm sure
how will secrets remain secret?
I'm sure there are also lots of relationships going along in the paddock with people at different teams, but you know, shares, relationships, it's all very incestuous.
Between two people so high up, I'm not totally sure that there is. I must admit that I originally misjudged Susie's entry into Formula One with the Williams team. I definitely thought she was there because of who she married. And I definitely thought She was more beneficial to Williams as a marketing person and a PR angle than she was as a development driver. It turns out I was wrong in both cases, because you wouldn't put somebody who you don't trust, whose opinion and insight and input you don't trust, you wouldn't put them in the car first, ever. Admittedly, I mean, there are other two choices at the moment, a Pastor Maldonado. Well, he might break it.
And he might.
There's Bottas. He's new. So they haven't got a vast amount of strength in depth in terms of talent and knowledge, but still, this is a huge vote in Suzu's favour, especially with the absence of Toto.
Female driver for 2014.
What?
Why not?
Well, I can't really say now, because I underrated her. Let's see how she does this year. I would be seriously impressed if that was the case. That would be fantastic.
So the Mercedes news was swiftly followed with more Mercedes news when Eddie Jordan, who, you know, it's EJ. We don't listen to what he says, but he does seem to have a bit of an edge on this whole Mercedes thing. He predicted Michael Schumacher and he predicted Lewis Hamilton going there, and they all came true. Mm-hmm. And he said that Ross Brawn was leaving and Paddy Lowe was coming in. As yet, none of that has come to fruition. The only proof we have of this is that Paddy Lowe was not present at the McLaren launch, but Ross Brawn says he's not going anywhere. So I'm not sure. Maybe Jordan's got it wrong this time.
Mercedes are right now an incredibly top heavy team. Everybody appears to have some form of management position. You have so many technical directors and managers and people at the top of the tree. You've got Niki Lauda, who's some kind of consultant. He's the guy who apparently convinced Lewis Hamilton to move to Mercedes. You've got Toto Wolff. Ross Brawn's not going anywhere. Nick Fry's still there.
Yeah.
You've got Bob Bell.
They got rid of Norbert Haug, but then they brought in two more. So that doesn't really help.
It is an unusual Formula One structure. It does feel like there's just too many people calling too many shots. I don't really, as yet, I've yet to establish who really is in charge there.
That does sound...
Who's the big boss of Mercedes Formula One?
That does sound like a really automotive industry type way of running things. Wasn't Toyota a bit like that too? Lots of chiefs at the top and not enough people doing the actual work.
Not enough talent in the wind tunnel. Tricky one, that. We shall see how it goes. Are you suspecting right now that everyone's going to stick around? There's going to be no more changes from Mercedes?
Well, Ross really seems confident that he's staying, and it would be very rubbish if he left at this late stage in the season, before the season.
At this late stage in the preseason?
At this late stage before the season of the season just coming, that's not here yet.
And Paddy Lowe, then. McLaren has stated that he will absolutely stick with their team for this year, but next year, it's anyone's guess. Do we see him taking a very, very, very long gardening leave type sabbatical away from Formula One before he comes back and moves to Mercedes?
Well, if McLaren aren't going to let him go and he doesn't want to be there anymore, then yeah.
And that's going to put one more person
person in charge.
Big time.
Next in line for some headlines was Pirelli, who did their big press launch of all the new tyres. The biggest change that we are going to see visibly, is that there's an orange stripe instead of the silver one.
Yay!
Which is very good, because
hallelujah.
We used to get confused between the silver and the whites.
It was a terrible idea. When you compare the old tyres, the white tyre and the silver stripe tyre, on paper, you couldn't tell the pair apart.
No.
You had absolutely no hope when they were strapped onto a Formula One car and sent around a track at 200 kilometres an hour.
Yeah, well, initially they said they weren't going to be seen at the same weekend at the same time.
Right.
So that didn't last very long, and we did see it, and it was very confusing.
It was useless. Orange is good. Orange has made a comeback. Orange is the new black.
Orange was there before when they were wet. I don't remember ever seeing orange, but I guess we must have.
There was... Here's a couple of things to bring up about this one then. So firstly, do we need a Formula One tyre launch party? Is that necessary? Is that what we do nowadays?
I quite like it.
Why?
I don't know.
It's just a tyre company. They're the sole tyre company.
They're so good, though.
Who cares?
Yeah, but Pirelli are so good. And they'd say that, you know, they did all the right things. They've changed the tyres to level the playing field again at the beginning of the season, and they're mixing it up. They want more pit stops, which I don't necessarily agree with, but, you know, it's supposed to be entertaining. And they listen to us, the fans. And so I think they should get all the launches that they want.
I do like this. This is a thing. I am a fan, or I was a fan, of tyre competition. And I kind of felt that it took something away from Formula One when we went for a sole tyre supplier. But it's really nice that there is a third party who have a vested interest in the sport being entertaining, that who isn't fighting amongst themselves. So the teams are solely out to get what's best for them and to eke any advantage they can, despite what they claim in terms of, you know, keeping it, things entertaining for the fans. You have Bernie Eccleston, his sole motivation is to make as much money as he possibly can by hosting as many races as he possibly can. He's fighting the teams to keep as big a share of the pot as he possibly can. But then you have Pirelli, who are this third party, who actually all they really care about is making sure people watch the sport in order to keep their brand in the spotlight. And yeah, that's nice. Well, I like having them on our side.
It's very refreshing because the Bridgestone and Michelin tyre war, which is what was happening when I first started watching, and I loved that, and I have said many times, bring back the last great tyre war. But then it was just Bridgestone, and they fought so hard to get people to talk about Bridgestone tyres but it was depressing and desperate, and they put stupid green stripes in where they shouldn't be. They didn't belong. But Pirelli, they seem to have the right idea, and we are all talking about them all the time, and it doesn't seem desperate. It seems like they're just trying to make it a better place.
I get the impression that Bridgestone listened to too many people. They listened to people who tried to influence them in ways that was not ideal, and therefore they ended up going down paths that were not, you know, were not best suited to their needs. Pirelli have an absolutely clear focus in Formula One, which is to make sure lots and lots of people look at their tyres going round and round as many tracks as possible. And that's all they care about. And what that means is they're keen to make the sport entertaining for us, to make sure that we don't turn off. The worst thing that can happen in Pirelli's eyes is that we all take Twitch channels and watch some other sport that they're not sponsoring or they're not involved in, and they're paying all this money for no good reason. And this is, it feels like they're one of us. So I am with you. I do like Pirelli. I just think that a tyre launch is unnecessary. It just seemed a bit over the top. They covered the tyres in a blanket. Here's the big reveal. They're black and they're round, and they got Pirelli written on them. This is not, it just seemed a bit maybe over the top.
No, I like
stretching the model maybe is a bit too far.
But everyone else gets a launch. Why shouldn't they?
Because especially, they're a tyre supplier. They're not a team.
But they're an integral part of the season. I mean, would last season have been anything if it wasn't for Pirelli?
Yeah.
They deserve a tyre launch. Let them have their moment in the sun.
Fine. I will concede this one. I don't care that much. It just seemed a little bit over the top to me.
And that brings us on to the other launches, the team launches, the ones that presumably you don't mind happening.
I look forward to a good launch more than anyone. It's worth recalling that this time last year, Sidepodcast was on a bit of a break, and we didn't cover any Formula One launches in 2012. And this year, it's good to be back and watching them and you know, enjoying the presentations and analysing the new parts. Missed that last year. Very much missed Christine's launch ratings.
Oh, really?
From 2012. Back in 2011, you gave every team, you analysed every team's launch, you gave them a mark out of 10. I look forward to that. I enjoyed your analysis of a launch, and we missed out on that in last season. So let's bring that back. Oh. I want to know.
Okay.
I would love to know, of the launches you've seen, how you rate them.
Well, where do we begin? I would like to start by saying that I like the launches that are proper events. I'm not so much looking forward to the ones where they just wheel them out before the testing starts.
Yes.
That seems a bit half-hearted.
That wasn't the word I was going to use, but I'll go with half-hearted.
I know there's money issues all over the place, but still, you know, how much does it cost to hire a hall and put a car in it?
Well, we'll see. We'll see what the teams that have launched thus far, they have done that. I mean, Force India technically launched their car at Silverstone in a garage, but they had no reason to be at that track running that car at the moment.
It's the track outside their door. So that is completely understandable. It's not like they were all turning up to Jerez anyway.
And people were going to see the car anyway, so they thought they'd better give photographers an opportunity.
Push it out an hour early and see what happens. Yeah.
Okay, so of the people who've launched thus far, what have you made of it?
Well, Lotus were first, and that was good. It was exciting. Obviously, it was the first one. I rate it very highly for being online on YouTube and happening after work. So I came in from work, and I could watch it and cover it, and
very convenient
good.
For people in the UK.
Yeah, not so much for those outside the UK. But that's a bit like what Formula One is like.
It's still European centric. So the launch didn't go without a hitch, though, because there was a plan for the event to be held in a marquee outside the factory, and gusts and
it was a bit windy.
Winds in the UK blew their marquee away, unfortunately.
Did it actually blow away?
It blew over.
It blew over.
Well, I mean, they know where it is. They didn't lose it. It didn't just whisk off in the distance. You
it
know,
didn't end up in the next county.
But no, Williams haven't accosted their marquee. No, okay. it's just fell over.
So they had to relocate inside, and they had some interviews with Gerard Lopez and Eric Boullier and the two drivers, and they pulled the covers off the car and they talked for a bit longer, and that was it. It was short and sweet.
Things that I like about this launch. Firstly, it has to be mentioned that Formula One teams have learnt, I suspect, actually, from... You remember the Red Bull guy who jumped out of space?
Yeah.
And something like they broke all the records for online streaming with YouTube.
Sites. 8 million.
8 million
something.
People watched that happen. And YouTube could handle that much traffic, didn't flinch, didn't fall over, proved to be a very stable place to launch a live stream. Formula One teams have absolutely cottoned onto that this year, and YouTube is the place to be to launch a Formula One car, which is good because in previous years, every single live launch, every single team site fell over.
It's definitely telling, because we would watch the launch on YouTube. And then
5 seconds of it.
And then we would try and get to press releases or news or pictures on the websites. They weren't there.
The second a car launches, the whole thing just falls over. It still happens. Lotus's website died immediately following their launch, but it was okay because we still got to see the whole thing on YouTube, and that was fantastic. They also broadcast it in the UK on Sky Television, Sky News.
It was a Sky fella presenting it.
Mm, it was a fine presentation, and that's possibly the first time that has happened. I mean, that you may be able to recall something from the past. I don't recall ever seeing a live Formula One launch on the television. So that's good. It's good that they got that much press coverage. They were the first team to launch, and they got a lot of interest from that.
So what am I scoring this out of?
Oh, 10? Yeah.
I'm going to say 8.
8 out of 10?
Yeah.
That's a good benchmark for the first team.
Yeah. Well, I like that they snuck in there first and beat McLaren to the punch, because McLaren were looking like they were going to be first for ages.
Yep.
And they made the best of what was a difficult, windy situation.
Yes.
It could have been a bit longer. I mean, you don't want it to go on forever and ever, but equally, it did feel a bit rushed. It was like, here's the car, bye. So that was weird. But yeah, other than that, I think it was very good.
I'm glad that you haven't held the fact that they jumped McLaren in the launch queue against them, because I know for a fact you took a day off work to cover the very first Formula One launch, and then all you had to do was come home from work and watch it. Because you took the day off for the McLaren launch, right?
I did.
Specifically
thinking
it
was going to be first. Thanks, Lotus.
It happened to be the second one. It was entirely pointless. So let's now talk about the launch of the new McLaren.
Yeah, that was not good. That was potentially one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. It started off with a half hour of build-up, which they build it as such. So I wasn't expecting it to be amazing, you know, coverage. But all it was two chaps who, I'm not sure who they were, McLaren people, I think.
Never introduced themselves, never knew their names, don't know what position they held.
They did say their names, but I didn't know who they were, so I would have liked a bit more context of who they were. But they talked...
What were their names?
And I don't remember. interspersed with videos, pre-packaged videos of McLaren things, like the technology centre, very beautiful, lots of nature. Not really build-up, it was more like lullaby putting you to sleep. It was calm. And they built that up, and then they had a stat off, which was amazing. Let's say whatever stats we can about McLaren and see who gets the best one. And they also talked about their favourite McLaren cars across all series. Now, I know we're probably quite unusual in the fact that we don't really care about much other motorsport and focus mostly on F1, but I didn't know any of the cars they were talking about. Two men talking about the cars that they like is not interesting
to me. This was the nerdiest of nerd television. Motorsport nerds getting together and talking about car engines. Yeah. Kill me now!
It was a bit like that. But then the launch started, and they had Natalie Pinkham. But she was reading. She was at a podium and she was reading. And it felt, someone in the comments at the time said, it felt very much like a funeral. And then that's when they showed a tribute, I guess it was a tribute, it could have been a memorial to Bruce McLaren, founder of the
team.
That
was uplifting, yep.
It was uncomfortable, it seemed very out of place. It's one of those things where in a completely different circumstances, could be very moving, and no, I didn't like it. Then they had lots of old cars come across the lake, which was fun, but again, by that time, we just really wanted to see the new car.
All I wanted to see was a new car. It was a new car launch. That literally was the only thing I cared about.
Yeah.
When the Lotus car launched, they said, here is the boss of the team. Here are the two drivers of the kit team. Let's whip the covers off. There's the new car. To me, that is how a Formula One launch should work. Okay, there was a billing, you're right, of a build-up, and the build-up was so utterly, mind-numbingly dreadful. You know, when three guys get together and they start discussing their favourite moments at Goodwood Festival of Speed and what might be coming up at this year's Goodwood Festival of Speed, you've gone off on a tangent.
At least they can say it.
You've gone off on a tangent that you're going to struggle to get back from. I was bored absolutely senseless by the whole conversation, and that was, it went on for half an hour before anything notable happened. I genuinely could have missed the entire of that first section, and that was before it got to the funeral part. And if ever there was a mistimed or misjudged Formula One presentation, I think that will rank amongst the top ones. If you were there in person, the sight of a Formula One car driving into the factory from the outside would be probably quite unique and a bit loud. Okay, there was a uniqueness to that which I could give them a bit of credit for, but my goodness me, all of it was old cars. All I wanted to see was Perez and Button and the new car. Why couldn't... And when that presentation finally came around, it was so brief and so structured and forced that it just didn't feel natural in the way that the Lotus launch felt perfectly natural. Natalie Pinkham is a dreadful presenter. I don't know what that woman's talent is, but it doesn't appear to be presenting on television or presenting in front of a crowd. They had a dress rehearsal the day before. How could she not have remembered her six lines that she had to say?
There was an issue with, she seemed to spend most of the time when she wasn't reading, positioning people. Here, come and stand over here in front of the car. Let's stand here so we can face these nice cameras. Now you've got to go over there and talk to the media. Please stand here, not there. And it was all quite logistical.
Logistical,
which was strange.
Yes, it was. Oh, stand at these marks, please. Now face this way. And now take a picture of this camera. And now say this. Now it's your turn to speak. Remember this thing we rehearsed yesterday? Say that now, Jensen. Oh, my goodness me. How can a team that produced something as brilliant as Tuned last year, which was probably my highlight of 2012. I think it was one of the greatest things about Formula One last year. I loved every single cartoon. I loved the concept. I loved what McLaren are doing. I thought they had turned a corner in terms of reaching out to the fans. You had Jenson Button, who was top of Christine's rankings last year. McLaren were the team to be associated with in terms of fans. And they just threw it all away with this Ron Dennis, whatever you call it, like, imagination of how the world should view McLaren. That's what it was during the launch. It was, here's how we want you to perceive this team. And I hated it all. I just wanted it to end. It was an awful way to spend a morning, and a complete contrast to the Lotus launch.
I think the drivers made the best of it, though. I mean, Button was his usual cheeky chappy self, and Perez was also, you know, he was trying to make jokes, and I think there's a bit of a communication barrier that he has to cross.
Mm-hmm.
First, but I think you know, it's hard to fill Hamilton's shoes in terms of the relationship they had, Button and he, yeah, together as teammates.
But I wanted to see more of it. I mean, they were barely there.
They had a chance to say a couple of words. They laughed a little bit, and then they were gone. I'm going to go with 2.
That's generous.
Yeah,
I would have given them a -2 at best.
So the Lotus launch was after work, and I took the day off for McLaren's boring launch. And then there were two more today, Friday, when I was sadly at work.
I managed to sleep through both today's launches. But in fairness, I was scarred by the McLaren launch.
Yeah.
So I've given up. At this point, I think I'd given up caring about seeing Formula One teams blather on about themselves.
Part of the trouble is that the cars have not changed significantly. Lotus had, the livery was a bit different because it had lots of more splashes of red on it. But the McLaren looked exactly like last year's. And the cars we've seen today are quite similar. The only difference is the step noses.
Let's quickly discuss the step noses, because when Ferrari's car launched last year, Luca Montezemolo said some rather rude things about his own car. He wasn't impressed with the look of it, and he wasn't happy with the way the look of Formula One cars were heading, understandably. This year, teams have the option of running a modesty panel of all the names of all the things in all the world. How twee. And that is effectively a small ramp on the front of their nose, which smooths out the ugly step. So the Ferrari managed to launch this year with a nice smooth nose, much to the delight of Luca.
Yes, they do look much better with this modesty panel, which, by the way, that phrase makes me want to throw up. It's awful. But, or they can call it a vanity panel if they want. That's so much better.
Oh, hold on a second. What, there are restrictions over what it can be called?
No, I don't know, but that's the two names I've seen for it.
Right.
I think that maybe in the regulations it's called the modesty panel. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, so it does look a lot better. Lotus did not have one, and James Allison said they didn't have it because it weighs a few grams, and obviously an F1 weight is everything.
But, at a launch, though.
Yeah, well, there is that. I mean, obviously the cars we've been seeing are not necessarily what's going to turn up on track, so they might have it, or the other teams might take theirs away.
Mm.
But yeah, he was complaining about the weight of it. But today launched the Force India launched their car, and Andrew Green said that the modesty panel was neutral as far as the car's performance is concerned, but tidies up the flow over the top of the chassis. So he thinks it's a good thing.
I was curious when they made the announcement of this proposed ugly cover, that because it was optional, teams would choose not to run it because any form of weight in Formula 1 is a bad thing. Red Bull have managed to optimise their car and they've got a slot in their nose, in the step. So whatever they're doing within the front of their car is going to be affected by a panel. So I'm not expecting any teams to run this thing. I'm sure they will be just as ugly on track as they have been this year. But
Last year. Mm.
But I do not see why you can't put them on at a launch. When you launch a car, you want it to look its very, very best. You want the pictures to go around the world, and you don't want your car looking pug ugly. And that Lotus, the Lotus did, because it still had a step. And just you're allowed to put a panel on it. Please put the panel on it.
Yeah, but
show some dignity.
There was some discussion in the comments about whether these cars would be changed before they take to the track, and they obviously will. But I do think there is a line between, you know, presenting something pretty at the launch and then just completely lying to the fans and saying we are going to have one, we aren't going to have one. I mean, if you make the most beautiful machine ever and then when it turns up in Australia, it's the worst thing you've ever seen. You're not going to be very happy.
I am surprised, actually, that a lot of teams don't just get an old car and repaint it. You know, like they do when they take cars to the Autosport show.
Yeah.
And they don't have the most recent car. They don't have even a model that's been raced within the last 3 or 4 years. But they put it in the most recent paint scheme. I'm surprised more teams just don't throw any old thing together and then say, that's our car. You ain't going to tell the difference. It's in the right colour, isn't it? It's got our new sponsors on it. I mean, all the launches are, when you break it down, is a chance to get sponsors' logos in front of Formula One fans' eyeballs, and therefore whatever shape the chassis is, it doesn't. No one's going to hold them to it, to make sure that it is the car that runs on track. So put the panel on it, run it in its best looking configuration, just as Ferrari have, just as Force India did, just as McLaren did. It's a no brainer to me. No one's going to make you run it on track just because you launch a car with a modesty thing.
Yeah, Force India weren't completely brilliant though, because they just had poor Paul all by himself.
Well, they've got one driver. That's all they've. Yeah,
I don't think you should be allowed. Don't think you should be allowed to launch your car unless you've got a full driver lineup.
It was an awkward moment when the drivers do the big reveal.
Yeah, did he have to take them covers off by himself? Because I've seen two drivers struggle.
It's very hard to take a cover off a Formula One car. It's impossible by yourself. And Paul had, I think he had Bob Fernley to help on the other side of the cover.
Thank God for Bob.
Thank God for Bob. Yes, somebody turned up and helped him lift the cover off. Force India are leaving it very late to announce Bianchi. Everybody seems to be aware of the fact that Force India are going to announce Bianchi, but for some reason, Force India don't want to announce Bianchi.
They won't confirm him, but Bob, thank God for Bob, said, the idea of the Nico Paul partnership not continuing into 2013 wasn't our plan. Obviously, it slightly derailed our programme. If we'd had an ideal world, we'd have liked to run Jules for 2 years as a third driver. So either he's leaving or he's getting the race seat, but why won't they just confirm it?
Because they...
He's essentially just confirmed it.
Yes.
But they can't say the actual magic words.
Because they are... Force India are clearly after something from Ferrari, because Bianchi is a Ferrari young... It's part of the Ferrari Young Driver Programme. And so they must want something that Ferrari has got, which is either money or bits, and whatever they want from the team, either now or in the future, it will come as a condition of running Bianchi.
Oh, it's driving me crazy. They said they're not going to confirm anything until Barcelona. Oh,
that's ages away. You know whose fault all this is, though?
Bernie, probably.
No, it's Lewis Hamilton's fault.
Oh.
If Lewis hadn't gone to Mercedes, Perez wouldn't have gone to McLaren. Hülkenberg couldn't have gone to Sauber, and then he would still be at Force India. So therefore, it's all Lewis Hamilton's fault that Force India launch, which won driver today.
So the Force India launch, I didn't see any of it live. There hasn't been any...
It wasn't streamed. Was it streamed?
I didn't see anything
about a stream. So points away for the lack of YouTube streaming.
There hasn't been enormous amounts of information coming out of the team either. Just a heap of Paul de Resta photos. Now, I know he's their only driver, but they don't need to take as many photos of as they would have... both, just of the one.
Yeah,
they get the message.
They took a year's worth of photographs of one guy in one afternoon. But they did run the car on track.
They did. So I'm going to give that a 6.
Okay.
No, 5.
Oh.
Because they've only got one driver.
Okay. And Ferrari, which you've conveniently skipped over.
Yeah.
Because they launched before.
They also launched today. This was a bit of a bigger deal. They had a big red... auditorium, carpets all red.
Points for effort.
Yes. And they did a quite fancy thing with the cover on the car, and they projected onto it what the car underneath looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Then it all went black, and then the car was unveiled, and oh, it was very exciting. They didn't actually take the covers off the car, though. They skipped that tricky little maneuver.
They dimmed the lights, yes.
Yeah.
That's probably beneath Alonso, actually, pulling a cover off a car. He's past that now.
He won't even turn up to the first week of testing.
No.
My favourite thing of the whole Ferrari launch, what I have read of it and seen clips of, was Luca de Montezemolo. When he took to the stage, the first thing he said was, "I felt a special atmosphere right from the start of the morning when I left my home in Bologna. We had not seen fog here for a long time, and it reminded me of the 1997 presentation, the year when Ferrari began its winning cycle." So the man is taking the fog this morning as a good omen, because there was also fog 16 years ago. How does he remember the weather? What is... That is odd.
That is superstition gone wild.
Yeah. But, yeah, I quite enjoyed that. He's gone a bit crazy.
What happened in 97?
I don't know. They began their winning cycle, and also it was foggy. There's two things you need to know about that season, and that is it.
Awesome. He's my new favourite person.
There were also pictures afterwards where he and the two drivers, he and I think it was Stefano, were having their photo taken by the car, and he had his arm right round Massa, and we couldn't work out whether he was hugging him or trying to strangle him. It didn't look very comfortable. I wouldn't want that man's arm around my neck, let's just say that. But Alonso and his, well, I'm not testing in the first week, I'll leave that to Massa and Pedro, because it's beneath me and I need to concentrate on my training and my resting. I mean, he did look tired. You know that thing where you can get someone out of their job with just a few words? He definitely looked tired.
We should talk about Pedro de la Rosa. We haven't discussed that. Pedro de la Rosa, now a Ferrari driver.
Yeah, well, Ferrari tester.
Of course, in the time that we've been away, HRT have vanished.
Oh yeah, that happened.
That did happen. Now, Pedro de la Rosa, he was on the market briefly. I assumed, incorrectly, that he would go back to McLaren, to his default job.
I expect they would have had him as well.
Yeah, they absolutely would have fitted him in somewhere. But no, he's popped up at Ferrari. He's been wearing red, and he gets first dibs on the new Ferrari. How do you rate the Ferrari launch then? It was on YouTube. It was streamed. That's very good. Points for that. The car was nice looking. They've got new sponsors. Worth mentioning, they have new sponsors. Force India announced... Who did Force India
announce? Force India announced a deal with TW Steel, who become their official timing partner. I don't know why you need one of those, because F1 has one of those globally. But they also confirmed a deal with Chatham Marine, who apparently are going to provide them with shoes. I love that. I wish I could announce a deal with someone to give me shoes.
Free shoes?
Yeah.
TW Steel used to be with Renault. Are they not there anymore?
Pass.
A lot of changing going on there. But new sponsors in a time of much hardship,
Ferrari,
a time when Marussia can't even afford to honour their contract to Glock. You have new money coming into Formula One. That's good.
Ferrari announced a deal with Weiche Power, which is a Chinese company.
Okay.
So the Ferrari launch, I will give... Quite a lot of it was in Italian, which obviously they are Italian, so I don't hold them that against them, but I couldn't understand it.
Right. Are people going to accuse them of cheating by talking in Italian and not in English on the radio?
No, I don't think so.
They're allowed, are they?
That one I will give a 6.5.
Is that all? I would have put that higher. I think I was not quite on par with the Lotus launch, but they put some effort into it. Yep. It was foggy.
The fog is so moving and instrumental to how a season unfolds. Oh, it's good.
Only 6.5.
All right, then
final
7.
Offer. Yay!
Podcasting this early in the season must show that we are quite into it this year. And I've been doing Fact Bite Fact Boxes already on the launches. And we've been writing posts all over the place. So I think, you know, we might have to watch every race.
Not, what, this season?
Yeah.
What, you want us to pay for Formula One coverage?
Well, I don't want us to, but I want to watch every race.
Really? You're that excited by it? I am. Well, here's the funny thing. Sky have announced the thing that I was waiting for last year. I was hoping that they were going to allow individual pay-as-you-go race subscriptions for people without the need for a dish and without the need for a long-term contract, which is sort of my main beef with Formula One going away from terrestrial television. I don't want to put an old satellite dish on the wall. I don't want to pay for a whole season, for a whole year's worth of coverage just to follow a Formula One season. So I was hanging on for pay-as-you-go. I thought it would come last summer. It's finally been announced this week. And Formula One fans in the UK can pay for F1 access for £9.99 per day.
For 24 hours access?
Yeah.
You want a tenner?
£20 a weekend if you don't mind missing Friday practice.
Yeah.
That is an extortionate amount of money.
It also, it doesn't make any sense to me because their big promotional whatever announcement said that it was the first time that Sky Sports has been available to watch without a subscription, except that I'm sure I was watching it last year on that little app.
Yeah. Last year, with the iPhone, there is an iPhone app from Sky Sports which will let you watch Formula One on a 4-inch screen for $4.99 a month, which is a reasonable price to watch Sky without a subscription or a satellite dish. So there already is pay-as-you-go coverage. I don't understand why they think this is an appropriate deal. I also do not know how they can charge that much money. So if you want to watch the 10 races that the BBC do not have this year, if you want to watch all of those races in the UK, it's going to cost you, and if you want to watch qualifying with it, it's going to cost you in excess of £200 to get it all. And yeah, that's a high price to pay.
Well, it's equivalent to the having to do it the way they want you to do it with the dish and everything anyway. So that's obviously their aim, is to make it so they don't lose any money whichever way you decide to do it. But it's a different prospect. I mean, the web subscriptions that I have, it's varies between $2.99, $7.99 a month, which seems, you know, seems worthwhile. $9.99 a day, £20 yes, a weekend. It's just, yes, baffling.
It's an obscure system. But what it does is it puts a price on Formula One. It puts a physical price and it says, for this coverage, this race on this day, it's going to cost you £10. Is it worth £10?
Yeah.
Is that worth money?
I don't know. I think
what else you could do with that money?
Yeah, but Fact Bite Fact Boxing is so much fun. The worst thing... the worst thing...
You don't want to watch Formula One. You want to cover Formula One.
Let me talk, man. The worst thing about it, I think, is just... it just makes finding a way of watching it difficult. You know, and it shouldn't be. It should be easy. It should be, here, press this button and it's on. Why does it have to be difficult? Why do there have to be a million options that we have to analyse and find out the best one? I just don't like it. Just make it so that I can press this button, give you my credit card details, don't charge me an extortionate amount, I'm happy to pay, and then there it is. I just, you know. And the app thing that we love so much, that's gone up in price. It's like £50, £100.
£50, £100.
I'm not paying it.
This is the
F1, it's like 25 or something, isn't
F1
it?
F1 timing app has gone up slightly in price, with the promise of it being more useful.
If they could get their tyre information right, that would be a good start.
But, oh, okay, that's touched the nerve. But let's compare the price of the F1 timing app, which is £25 for a year, or Sky pay-as-you-go coverage, which is £25 for 2.5 days.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the F1 timing app is seeming like a bargain to me.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're not in the UK, you're not interested in anything we're talking about here, and you're probably thinking, woe is you, you poor people.
And well, other people have said, well, I paid this much money to go and see it in person, and I paid this much money to do this and everything. Yes. And money is different to different people, and people get different values out of it. It's just like I said, it just upsets me that it's just complicated. Mm. And it shouldn't be complicated. It should be easy. It should be the easiest thing in the world. That is how you get F1 out there.
Mm. Yes,
just
yeah,
make
yeah,
it. Yep. It's here. Watch it. End of story.
But the good news is we now have, there's a price and a delivery mechanism which suits us. And we didn't have that last year. So in some ways, more choice is good. You just have to make that decision.
You're making that
decision now? Are you telling us that you're going to watch every race? Because I haven't made that decision.
I'm making any decision.
Okay.
It also depends on delays and things like that, but that's more technical.
The Sky coverage on screen will be about 60 seconds behind everybody else's live coverage, which makes things tricky with the in combination with the F1 timing app, because you can see who makes the pass before they make the pass on the television. So there are other issues at play and other things to be decided. But I like that we've got an additional choice, even if that choice is utterly absurd.
We've already touched upon the fact that I've been doing some fact boxing already. It's only just the beginning of February and there's already been several on the site. We've got some, it looks new and there are some new icons, which are very pretty. And we put it in actual blog posts and things now.
It is all changed for the fact box, but it's under the hood changes. And we can do more with it this year. It's more interesting, but I don't think we could really pick out any super features which we've added. We've spent now 6 weeks working on it in the off-season. We've been busy in the off-season. The Fact by Fact Box is all new and shiny, but actually, most people, I think, if they look at it, they'll say, well, it looks pretty much the same as when you left it. But you'll have to see as the season progresses what we can do with it. Are you promising to do more? If you're thinking of watching all the races, you're thinking of covering all the races, will there be more Fact by Fact Boxing for us to follow?
Yeah, I hope so. I like doing it. It's fun. I've been fact boxing the launches that I am available for, which is always good, the ones that are streamed on the YouTube. Getting all those quotes in, everyone saying, yes, I'm looking forward to the season, I'm going to work really hard.
That is the anatomy of the F1 launch.
50 different ways of saying the same thing. It's it's brilliant. I love it.
Everybody's been working really hard and we think we're going to do really well.
Yeah.
The team, everyone in the factory is going to be commended. I think the cars are the fastest car we've ever built, etc. Yep.
Fabulous.
That is the way of the world. There is no way around that because no one's going to stand up there and say, well, I haven't driven it yet. What do you want me to say?
You have been working hard on some behind the scenes bits and pieces. And during the off season, I took over the Twitter account to let you have some time and some space to, you know, do whatever it was you were doing. And I'm going to keep it. Sorry, you can't have it back.
I might not want it back.
Well, you can't have it anyway. I like having it. I think it's good because Cypodcast is mine.
Have you staked your claim?
Yeah.
In 140 characters, you have said, this is mine and I am taking over. Okay, I don't mind, actually. It's yours. You can keep it. You enjoy it. You see what it's like when the season gets going because Cypodcast Twitter gets kind of busy.
Well, it does get busy, but I'm hoping to be slightly less controversial and slightly more friendly.
Oh, I do like winding people up.
You do like winding people up. But you can always keep up with you. You can always keep up with you because you're on Twitter yourself at Better Than.
You can follow me if you desire, but I will most definitely wind you up, annoy you, and
talk a lot get of technology stuff too. So.
I'm glad though, it's good. It makes more sense for you to do it. I'm glad that you've been busy. Last off season, we obviously spent a lot of time working on new things for 2012. This season has been more relaxed. You kept the site ticking over. You've been working incredibly hard, and good for you. I'm glad that you're still into it. Formula One didn't kill you last season, which is a good sign. You didn't need to take a break, and your work ethic has been impressive.
Yeah, well, it's been good fun, and the preseason is picking up speed, and the season is coming at us full throttle. I mean, I remember retweeting the countdown to F1. And it was like 100 and something days, and now it's 46 or something like that. I mean, where did all that time go?
It's less than 46 even. At the time of recording, you have 43 days left before the first Formula One Grand Prix of this season. I can tell you are already excited about it. We're doing a show. It's an unannounced, unexpected show. Will there be more this season? Will there be more this pre-season?
Of course, there'll be more shows. There'll be more of lots of things. And all we have to do is figure out how we're going to watch F1.
There's more launches coming. I need to know how you rate all of those. Most of them will be a car wheeled out of a garage for photographers before it takes to the track. But I'd like to see what you think of it. I'd like to see how you rate it. And I'd like to see if anyone does any worse than McLaren.